Yeah, good stuff. Isn't it interesting how as we've been looking at these, we're seeing that every person who is great at something physically has had somebody else build into them. They've had somebody else teach them what to do. He said he's trained hundreds of people. In fact, if you think about the things that you do physically that you do really well, it's probably because you modeled yourself after somebody or somebody's built into you. And so we're in this series, we're looking at the book of James in the Bible and how somebody is building into us to do physical things from afar through the printed word. And so that's what we're going to look at today, the physicality of spirituality. And the element of physicality that's tied up in our mouths, how we talk. And so let's pray before we dig into it. Father, thank you for moments like this to learn and grow and be different. I pray that happens. I pray that we are different and we do different things when we walk out of here. I thank you for the opportunity to speak. Thank you for the words that you've given us, mouths that function, jaws that function, tongues. I don't want to take it for granted, the ability to communicate, and I don't want to take this moment for granted either. I ask that you would help the words that come out of my mouth to be in alignment with your heart, and that you would give us your truth in new ways today. I pray these things according to your character, the person and name of Jesus. Amen. Well, it looks like the economy here in America is starting to bounce back a bit. Certainly not as quickly nor as robustly as any of us would like, but you know, signs are good, signs are positive. Part of why it's happening is because economies around the world are struggling and they are going into different seasons. In fact, many American companies are growing, and as they grow, they're pulling back manufacturing jobs that they've outsourced to other countries and pulling them back to the United States. In part because those economies, the cost of doing business in those countries is going up. Skilled labor in those countries is going up. Fuel is going up. And so why ship something back with a high fuel cost? And so American companies are making and creating, fabricating more things here on American turf. But it's coming with a difficulty because many of our fabricators, many of the physical disciplines that have existed in the trades have been lost. They're lessened. We haven't been reproducing new people who do things such as tool and die makers, people who make these little clay molds that then are the pattern for kicking out parts, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 parts. The tool and die makers are actually in very short supply. In USA Today, it quoted this issue and said this, "But the strength of that revival, economic revival, could be threatened by the challenges facing a small and beleaguered sector of manufacturing that evokes images of a quainter, more labor-intensive era, the tool and die industry." So we have fewer people that do these no-brainer industrial things. And actually, this is a pattern in our entire country. We're becoming less and less tactile and less able to maneuver things with our hands, with our fingers. I hate to ask us how many of us have actually know how to change the oil on an automobile. Most of us couldn't even identify a drain plug. We wouldn't know how to get a drain plug out. We wouldn't know what to do with oil. These are things that we just outsource to Jiffy Lube now. And I do. I mean, I send my cars to Jiffy Lube, but I also have the mechanical know-how to understand those things. And we've lost that. We've gained proficiency in texting and surfing the web. But we've lost the ability to maneuver things and to make things with our hands. It's what actually made our country great. It's why in World War II we were able to actually win, as other countries in the world were astounded by the industriousness of Americans, astounded that we could turn our manufacturing on a dime and crank out warships and planes. And this thing that's in part of our national heritage is actually gone. And I'm not all that upset about it. I think it is a bummer, but you know, hey, global economy, I understand all those realities. But what I don't like is that our lack of physical industriousness here in our country actually mirrors our lack of physical industriousness in our spirituality. Just as we become a knowledge economy, we want to get new ideas, we've lost the ability of physical engagement. So also, people are in churches all across the country and have lost the ability to physically engage. We've somehow believed that spirituality is about learning new things. No, it's not. We think spirituality is about having a new emotional experience. Why it says, no, it's not. we've lost the physicality of spirituality. We've lost the awareness that how I move my body and what I do, and today specifically with my mouth and tongue, those things, you want to say that again, don't you? I'm not going to do it again. Those things contribute to our walk with God and our power of life. In the book of James chapter 2, verse 14, it puts it this way. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? So what good is it? You say, I've got beliefs, but you got no physicality. You've got no works. You say you've had spiritual experiences, but it's not translating into tactile changes in your behavior. What good is it? What he's saying is you really don't have a faith that's honoring God if there isn't physical things that are changing. There is spiritual growth. Spiritual growth is labor intensive. Spiritual growth is labor intensive. It's not learning intensive. It's not feeling intensive. It is labor intensive. And the whole book of James is all about this. And as we look today at the labor of our mouths, many of us don't believe that that's a spiritual activity. In fact, many of us have devalued the role that words play in our life. And we've all heard this phrase, right? Sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me, right? Lies! Lies, lies, lies. Lying like a rug. Absolutely not true. We all know this isn't true. I've had numerous broken bones and broken limbs and scars and stitches all over my body. My left arm alone, I've broken this arm twice. And yet, that doesn't hurt me any longer. I never think about my broken arm. It doesn't affect me at all. The only time I think about it is I look at it and I say, oh, there's my 17 stitches from my first operation. It doesn't affect how I move. It doesn't affect anything. But the names that I've been called in elementary school, they stuck with me. The traumatic events when I was being ganged up on verbally at a Little League baseball game, those things stick with you. In fact, all of us in here, there's things that people have said to you that have hurt you and you still remember them. Let's take 5 seconds to remember a few. Don't even need five, do you? Already got it. Bam, got it right there. There's a power to words, not just negative words, but positive words. Mark Twain put it this way. A man can live for 2 months on one good compliment. It's true. There's power. There's power to it. So with this awareness of that reality, let's take a look at what James says, starting at chapter 3, verse 1 and following. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For we all stumble in many ways, and if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. And if we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. Oh, how great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. Now, what's it mean to say that the tongue is set on fire by hell? It means that by default, our mouths will not function in a godly way. By default, our mouths have more in alignment with hell than they do with heaven. We don't come out of the womb and naturally operate as encouraging, positive, selfless people. We don't. We naturally act as selfish, discouraging, critical, gossipy people. That's the natural way your mouth is functioning right now, unless you have a spiritual training regimen that comes against it in the opposite way. And so throughout the book of James, it keeps talking about the tongue over and over again. In chapter 1, verse 19, it tells us to be slow to speak. Chapter 1, 20, it talks about how we are angry and we use our mouths to get into verbal jousting matches. 4, 11, it talks about slander, gossip. 4, 16, how we use our tongue to puff ourselves up and say how great we are and talk about all of our accomplishments. Me, all those things. 5'9", grumbling. Oh, I can't believe it. You heard what he said last time. Grumbling. 5'12", using our mouths to swear oaths to try to convince people we're going to actually do something instead of actually doing it. And it starts off by talking about the power of a teacher. It says, hey, be very careful if you're a teacher, because God is very aware of what happens with teachers. What is the point of a teacher? The point of a teacher is to use your mouth to get somebody to do something differently. That's the point. You know, whenever I speak here at Crossroads or anywhere, I am never trying to speak and teach in order to impress you with my knowledge base. Don't even know if I could do that, actually. Never. Some people think that good teaching is about, I never heard that before. That is not teaching in the Bible. Good teaching is not giving an idea that no one's had before. It's not putting it in a way you've never heard of before. It's not like giving you deep things to think about while you sleep. That stuff may happen every once in a while. But teaching is when you use your mouth to get someone to be different. When I teach, I have one goal, only one goal all the time. It's I want you when you leave here to do things that you weren't doing before you came in here. I want you to leave here and not do some of the things that you were doing when you came in here. The tongue in the mouth of a teacher is about guiding and directing. And James uses three different metaphors to illustrate the same thing over and over and over again. In advertising, they call this the rule of three. James was using this before there was an advertising industry. Rule of three. Three times he says the same thing in slightly different ways in order to drive the point across. So the first thing he talks about is a rudder. A rudder. What is the point of a rudder? To guide, to direct, to change course. I love how Bob put it earlier. This is about 1% of the mass of a boat. And yet this 1% changes the direction. My tongue. A tongue, I hear. It's probably, I don't know, 1% of my body mass maybe. But yet my tongue can change the course of my life and your life. The tongue, rudder. Another illustration he uses is the bridle, the bit. We had the Kentucky Derby this last weekend, and, you know, massive muscular animals with sinewy tendons popping out all over them, flying down a track, 1,500-pound animals, and they're controlled by this, about a pound and a half of metal, a bit. A pound and a half of a 15-pound horse is guided by the direction is set by this. And he goes on and he gives another illustration. Forest fires. The direction that the fire goes, how it starts. How does it start? It starts with a simple spark, a little fire. Yes. A little trick from the speaking world right there. That's right. How you warm up your vocal cords. Yes, it is. You want to see it again, don't you? You're like, all right. Just because it's 11:45 and I'm almost done working today, I'll do it one more time for you. Here we go. All right. So, good. You're saying, how did he do that, Mildred? I don't understand. Look it up on the internet. Look it up on the internet. You'll figure it out. So, our tongue is used for a lot of things, not just alfalfa kisses, not just for telling jokes, but actually guiding. What's alfalfa kiss? An alfalfa kiss. That's what an alfalfa kiss is. It's used, I'm trying to do anything I can to have fun here today, because that's really just about me lightening you up a little bit. But our tongue actually sets direction. It sets course. Just like a rudder sets course, a bit sets course, a fire sets and changes the direction. And it's not just the spoken word. I believe that an application here is any sort of communication. It can be texts, it can be emails, it can be blogs, it can be personal notes. When James was writing this, there was no such thing as texts or blogs or emails. There even wasn't such a thing as being able to write a personal note and give it to a courier and get it to go elsewhere. If you were hyper, hyper rich maybe, but the average people James was talking to, they couldn't do that. This is just the power of communication, not just the sound wave, But when you communicate, you can alter life. You, right here, right? You have amazing power. In fact, we're going to give you an exercise a little bit where you're going to be able to alter somebody's life. You have power in your tongue. Don't think that you do. You do. And if you're just accidentally using it, you're going to be using it probably in an unhealthy and even ungodly way. So the first way to kind of garner your speech, to exercise it, is to just give it a rest. Like, talk less. That's the easiest thing. Just talk less. The book of Proverbs, it puts it this way, chapter 17. Even a fool is thought wise if he keeps silent, and discerning if he holds his tongue. So you could be a real idiot, but people could think you're smart if you just talk less. They'll think, oh my goodness, he's so measured in his thinking patterns. For a lot of us, listening is just waiting for you to get done talking so I can start blabbing again. And Proverbs talks about this over, just shut your yapper. Just quiet. Quiet, zip it. Just talk less. It's a good beginning training plan for our mouths. Just talk less. When we start to talk, we can understand that our speech, it sets direction for our life. Speech sets direction. In the beginning of the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, 2, 3, God calls creation into being, and he does it, so the Bible says, by speaking it. He speaks it. He says, and God said, let there be light. There's something powerful about God speaking to bring things into existence. And we as human beings who are created in his image, we have things in common with him. There's a power to our words. When we speak, we can actually contribute to bringing them into existence, bringing that thing into reality. This is what is drawn upon in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 4, talking about this reality when it says this. Since we have the same spirit of faith, according to what has been written, I believed and so I spoke, we also believe and so we speak. We think it, we say it, and it actually ends up impacting actions. Proverbs 18:21 puts it this way. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. What we say can bring life, and it can bring death. When I started to realize this, it changed things about how I operate. I started using my mouth for things other than just asking for directions or complaining about things. I started to realize that my tongue can be a creation instrument. I use it accordingly. So here's an example. When I go work out, I say out loud to myself what I'm going to do. If I just go, oh, I guess I'm going to go up there and mess around today, nothing happens. But if I go 30 minutes on the elliptical. Once I say it, it's a source of accountability, and I want to obey my own voice. Or if I'm on the elliptical and I'm going, oh, maybe I'll do a little bit more, I'll go 5 more minutes. I'll actually say it, not quite that loud for other people to hear, but I'll actually say that. I want to personally say things to set the direction for my life. I said to my wife over and over again, and to my kids, I will never leave you. Said to Libby, honey, I love you. I will never leave you. Some of us who've been married have never said that. Why have we never said that? Because we want to keep our options open. I'm serious. We've said things like, you know, if you ever cheat on me, I'm gone. We've said that. We've never said, hey, I just want to refamiliarize with yourself the vow that I will never leave, because we realize that sets a direction, that kind of establishes something. This is why we talk a lot of Crossroads here in a teaching environment. What we're going to do, how we're going to start in Florence, how we're going to do different sites, how we're coming against generational poverty. Why do we do this stuff? We don't do it because we just like to talk about cool big things. It's because until and unless you speak it, it will not happen. You can have all the brainstorming meetings you want, all the planning sessions, all the prayer meetings, but until you get public and you say, we are going to do this, nothing will happen. Our speech has that power. So personally, that's how I use it, and also interpersonally. One of the things my dad taught me was whenever you borrow a tool, always return it in better condition than you got it in, right? And a lot of us learned that. Unfortunately, I've not always done that. But I have done it more often than not because he steered my life by doing that. And I've actually kind of taken it to a different arena. My arena is interpersonally, not just personally, interpersonally. I always want to leave somebody who interacts with me in better condition when they leave. Every time someone comes into my personal orbit, I want them to leave in better condition than when they came. I want to be able to give them an encouraging word. I want to be able to give them an insight. Sometimes it's saying something that's a little difficult that everyone knows and no one's saying, they're afraid to say it, but I care for that person enough that I want to say it. Even a three-sentence email, I can say something encouraging in a three-sentence email that most people normally don't hear because we live in a very self-centered, destructive culture. We're trying to find the worst in people versus trying to lift people to a new place. So I want to do that regularly. I want to leave people in a better condition than when I first got them. So I go pick up my car. Go pick up my car, and when I have work done to it, I take it to a place, and there's Les, who's the mechanic, his daughter, Michelle, she kind of is the front desk person, and man, whenever I pick up my car and pay for it, I say something like, hey, thanks so much for doing an amazing job. I've got these old cars, and I'm always concerned whether I'm going to be taking advantage of, and to be able to bring them to you and have you guys give me a great price and think creatively and do amazing work is a major blessing to me and my family. Thank you for doing what you do really well. You ever done that for your mechanic? Or the person who delivers pizza? If you think that way, I do. Man, I want the opportunity to steer somebody. I want the opportunity to actually bless somebody, to leave them better than they were when they first came around me. See, speech does that. It alters directions. We're here today, or you're who you are, in large part because of the words that have been spoken to you. Scary, isn't it? That's the power. And when you recognize that power, you see it not just as a spiritual growth metric, but also as a growth tool in the life of other people. So speech is a direction for life, and speech is a reflection of life. My speech reflects the trajectory of my life. My speech reflects what's going on in my life, what's going on inside of my heart. Jesus puts it this way in Luke chapter 6. The good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good, and the evil person out of the evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. Jesus says, whatever is in vast supply inside of the heart naturally comes out of the mouth. What's in here just comes out of here. We've all seen over the last several years various celebrities or well-known people who have said things. They've gotten themselves in trouble, specifically some people who have said some things that are very racially charged. And what happens when someone says something that's off color racially or something like that? What happens for the next week? They spend their time telling everybody, I'm not a racist, right? Spend their time. Well, Jesus would say, if that came out of your mouth, that's what's in your heart. It's just natural. And by the way, I happen to believe that all of us have elements of racism in us. I do. The inclination that somebody who lives someplace else and is different looking than me, that somehow my ideas are better, something like that. So I'm not cracking when we say things that are off color or aren't right. But what I'm cracking on is when we try to say, well, I said that, but that's really not the way I am. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. What is going naturally on inside of you comes always. I mean, some of us can so instantaneously turn any phrase into sexual innuendo. Anything that's said, we can just kind of go that way. Everything is, oh, that's what you, oh, yeah. Why is that? It's because we are sex crazed. We are over sex. There's something happening in your mind, in your heart, around the sex thing that is just extreme. And so it's your go-to conversation. Some people's go-to conversation is the weather. How about the weather today? I guess nothing's going on in your heart if you always talk about the weather. But some people's go-to conversation is just it's sexual stuff. Other people, what's going on in their heart, everything is about money. More money. So they're loving to talk about return on investment, marginal cost. What's the budget? How much do you think he's pulling down? What's the way? They're always stuff because they're money-focused. And so they see everything through financial, what's he's making? What's she doing? How come every? No, what's going on in your mouth is naturally letting off steam from what's going on in here. There's a power to it. One of the things to cement this for you is just to dialogue with yourself and identify the words that have negatively and positively impacted you and how often they rattle around in your mind and affect the course of your life. I'll give you some examples from me, negative and positive. Negative ones or damaging words that have steered me in a wrong direction or potentially steered me in a wrong direction. A number of years ago, as Crossroads was on a real steep learning curve, growth curve, trying to figure out what exactly my role is going to look like, how we need to restructure ourselves, and that kind of thing. And we brought in a consultant who actually was more of an insultant than a consultant. We brought him in, and there were some folks that really wanted me to not be involved in day-to-day ministry here at Crossroads. They wanted me to get on the speaking circuit, really go into publishing books heavily, and just there's a whole world for Christian authors, writers, preacher people that don't really lead and manage day by day. They kind of do out the communication thing out there and become celebrity. And so there's some folks that really wanted me to do that, and I just never felt really good about that. And as this guy sort of got their ear, or they got this guy's ear, and he was trying to get me to remove myself from day-to-day ministry stuff, and he said this to me. He said, they started going after my character, and he said, Brian, I can assure you with absolute certainty that any organization you are involved with day-to-day will be dysfunctional. Ooh. When you hear that, it hits you like, gosh, I got to think about that. Rock me. Came to realize that that wasn't true, but I'll tell you what, I can still remember the quote. You listen to all services, it's the exact quote, right online, because those words have power. Now, you know, years and years and years later, it was totally untrue. And you've seen us at the Inquirer every year. They have best workplaces, and when we have our staff fill out surveys, we win or are in the top two every year. Nationally, we've been in publications for the culture here that gets stuff done as hell. So there was no truth to that whatsoever. Yet it almost altered a bunch of things and really knocked me for a while. It was damaging words. Other words, when I first came to know Christ, I had people who were teachers who were teaching me, and these people I didn't even know personally. You know, they were on the radio or something like that, and I would have words that were drilled into me that have negatively affected my view of God and incorrectly affected my view of God. Phrases like this would come through over and over and over again. There will come a day when you will go before God and you'll have to give account for every word, every action, and fact. Your whole life is going to be laid bare on a giant screen for everybody to see. I hear that, I go, oh my goodness, ow. That's going to be... And then I realize, wait a minute, there is no screen in the Bible. In fact, there's no even electricity, let alone lumens in the Bible. And then I started thinking about that more. I went, yeah, well, I know there's a judgment. God is judge. That's part of his job description. I agree with that totally. But there's also these verses like Romans 8:1 that says once you come into relationship with God through Jesus, that there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Oh, man. But what that did, those words, what they did is they warped my view of God that would make me believe that any interaction with God would be one of condemnation. Any interaction with God would be one where he would spank me, where he would call me out on something. So every once in a while, someone will come to me and say, hey, Brian, I sense that there's something God wanted me to just tell you. And I'll immediately go, oh, no, please. Because my assumption is bad news is coming. I'm about to get spanked. Bad news. What is it that my immediate thought is God is going to speak to me, it's going to be negative and condemnation. That is unbiblical. How about God just affirming and encouraging? That's all throughout the Bible. This is my son, this is my own daughter, in whom I'm well pleased. But my view of God was warped and put in a weird direction that I'm actually still trying to fight it back to where it is biblically. Sometimes there's words of commission, words that are committed, it negatively steers. Sometimes it's words that are simply omitted, words of omission, words that should be said that are not said. I didn't have many authority figures that actually built into me, that actually affirmed me, called things out in me that were great. It wasn't until much later that started happening in my life. And it caused me to be cynical of leadership, caused me to be cynical of decisions that were made when I wasn't present. Not good. Not good at all. These are examples of damaging stuff. Okay, enough negative stuff. Positive stuff. Things that have altered my life. They've set the direction of my life, and it's because of the words. 16, 17 years ago, whatever it was, I got the call. Got the call to come to Cincinnati, be the first staff member, be the founding pastor to start this thing called Crossroads. And when I got the job offer on the phone while I was in Pittsburgh, I hung the phone and I thought, oh, it was very, very intimidating. I'm thinking to myself, gosh, how am I going to do this? I'm going to leave my denomination I'm ordained in. I'm going to leave lifelong friends, leave family, leave a city where there's a winning football team every year. I said, how am I going to do it? And I found out there's certain phrases we use that are physiological realities. My feet were instantly cold when I hung up that phone. Cold feet. I need to go to the bathroom. I got ready to pee myself. I got to go to the bathroom. I made it, fortunately. But that phrase, I was so scared I could pee myself. I was like, man, I need to go. I was so intimidated, so freaked out instantaneously that I tell you honestly, if Libby wasn't there and she wasn't able to talk to me and direct me inside the first 5 minutes, my life would be totally different. She said, honey, what are you so freaked out about? You can do this. You were created for this. Honestly, had she not directed, been there, my life would look entirely different. It's because of the power of her words. A number of years ago, my life was also altered. It didn't feel good initially, but it was great. Sometimes words that come to us are a bit difficult, but we need to hear them. The book of Proverbs talks about this. Proverbs chapter 28, verse 23, it says, whoever rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with his tongue. So some of us just say nice things. We don't slander gossip, but we're just saying nice things so people like us. It's just as bad. Still no truth that's coming out. But when you're really loving somebody, you want to dig in, sometimes you give them information that no one else has been willing to give them. So I was doing jury duty a few years ago. I was waiting to see if I was going to be on this next trial. And in this season of my life, I was just really getting an attitude towards certain people. And I learned that I was getting an attitude towards people who said they believed in the Bible, and specifically and especially pastors, other people who are in my profession. And I've come to understand since really bad thing is willing to give grace to somebody who doesn't believe in the Bible, those of us who are in here not sure you believe in Jesus, giving you grace for what you're doing, awesome, all great. Well, a weird thing happens. As soon as someone comes into the faith, we go from giving them grace to giving them law. Okay, God. Now you need to do this. You need to do this. And in my own interaction with people, I was able to do this. I was given all kind of grace to people who had variant beliefs, who were outside of the faith. But then folks that were in the faith, and specifically pastors, I was just getting a bad attitude. I can't believe, why are they not doing it? They said this, they're not doing that. So I was on the phone, and a guy I was talking with on my cell phone, Jerry Kirk, he said this. He said, Brian, you do a way better job of giving people faith who are outside the faith than your own brothers and sisters in Christ. I went, oh, gosh, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. I think I'm better at that today, and it's because of those words have enabled me to just be funner and happier and more graceful around people who have the similar beliefs than thinking that people aren't doing X, Y, and Z. Not good. Change me. Last one, I have this little post-it note. A post-it note that's written on falls in the context of this chapter, I believe. And this one is from my oldest daughter, Lena. She left this in my office one day, and I saved it and have it pasted right above my computer. Here's what it says. Dad, thank you for giving me a passion for what God is passionate about and not what the world is passionate about. I love you, and you're a great dad. Oh, my goodness. Man. I'll tell you what, I don't know if she's intending on doing it or not, but she altered the trajectory of my parenting. I tell you, you get a word like that, you're going to be a better parent. You are. You're just going to be more aware. You're going to be more cognizant. You're going to do, she helped set direction with those things. See, when we all have a problem with our mouths, all of us do, it's natural, it's inherent. If you've got a problem, don't feel bad, you're normal. But God doesn't just take that away. We grow out of our problems. God doesn't eliminate our problems. We grow out of our problems, and it's through tactile, physical discipline that our spiritual lives, our lives with God, is growing. So right now, I get to give you an exercise for that. A lot of times, I don't know, have no idea how or what you're going to do differently outside of here, but today's a good day because you get to have a workout right here, right now. You're going to be able to text, email, or call on the phone. If you don't have any electronic device, you can write a note in your program and then mail it when you get out of here. An uplifting and encouraging word for somebody, maybe the only one they've heard all week or for a long, 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 long time. And if some of us have never done this before, here's what it looks like. I'm actually giving you a script. You'd say something like this: "Hey, blank, I was just thinking about you, and I wanted you to know that whatever it is." So I'm going to do this right now. This has been fun. I've been able to do this for 5 different services, different person every time. And when I came down here today, this person just was in my mind. So I'm going to call him. He is my next door neighbor, Dan. I hope he's not in here. If he is, this would be awkward. If you get an answering machine, that sometimes is the best because you can encourage them and they'll keep it and play it over and over and over again. Actually, answering machines are great because you can get right to the point and not have like small nice talk. It's good stuff. Here we go.
Hi, this is Dan. Please leave your name and message and I'll return your call.
Danimal, hey, this is Brian calling. Hey man, great, great party last night. I told you before, I want to tell you again though, you have an amazing gift for hospitality. Amazing gift to make people feel welcome. And I love that about you. In fact, I remember when you first moved in right beside me, I was thinking, oh no, somebody goes to Crossroads, it's going to be weird, we're living right next to me. I don't know if I've told you, I want to tell you, you have been an amazing neighbor. I'm real thankful for you, and especially thankful that you hired Mariah last night. That's good stuff. So hey man, thanks for being a good brother, and we'll see you. I appreciate your role in the neighborhood. Bye. There you go. That's it. Good. Not perfect. You know, I don't know if I word that exactly correctly, but man, it's better than nothing. So here we go. Pull out your phones. Call somebody right now. Text them right now. You cannot borrow my phone. No, you cannot. I have pictures on there you can't see.
What?
Kidding. Think about the power that's happening right now. Got a bunch of people in here. The power that's happening in other people's lives. Very, very cool. And word of the wise, don't tell them either that this was an assignment from church and you had to do it. That would like negate it. It's a good murmur, isn't it?
It is. Right. I kind of thought you were going to call me. I was secretly hoping.
Phone ringing.
But it didn't.
All right, hey, let's stand up while we're doing this. You can still do this if you want. We're going to use our mouths right now, and our mouths are going to be directed towards God. God likes when we sing to Him. He likes when we sing in His presence. And so it's, again, another physical thing we do with our mouths that grows us and honors God. So let's sing this song together.